This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Today, part two of our series on female juvenile justice. The surge in the past 10 years in the numbers of young women entering the juvenile justice system has caught that system off guard. Across the country, detention homes originally built to house delinquent boys are now struggling to serve a growing wave of girls, a population that often enters the system not just as criminals, but also as victims of sexual, emotional, and physical abuse.
We recently visited a state-run detention home in Boston's Dorchester neighborhood, a squat brick building surrounded by towering fences and coils of razor wire. Like many facilities across the country, the home was experiencing growing pains, struggling to cope with a new population of girls, girls who are troubled and in trouble. Two dozen young women, all teenagers, line up for their evening meal in a space that looks much like a woman's dormitory, with mauve color trim, a bookcase stacked with love stories, and a collection of sofas with floral prints. The space conveys a kind of shabby comfort, a space spruced up with girls in mind. Nancy Carter runs two high-security units here at Dorchester. As the girls head down to dinner, she walks us through her wing and explains how she tries to balance punishment with efforts to pump up the girls' self-esteem.
We have set aside beauty days on the weekend where we collectively with staff do their nails, do their toes, all the girly kind of things that are important, actually, that make them feel good about themselves. And I actually have a couple of staff that work the weekend who are licensed hairdressers. So the girls who are here a little longer, they'll get their hair done. So it becomes a beauty day, basically.
That's very important to the young ladies here.
It is, especially in here more, because even in a place like this, it's important to take good care of yourself, personal hygiene, and grooming skills.
There is a strict separation of boys and girls at this campus. Most detainees in both groups spring from the same neighborhoods, usually poor. They attend failing schools and often come from broken homes. And yet Carter says the differences between the two groups are vast.
Girls are much more vocal. They're much more loud. They're much more emotional. There's a high rate of mental health issues that come in with the girls as well. And I'm not saying the boys don't have some of the same issues, but they verbalize or they vocalize or they show it much differently. Girls are very outward with everything, and I think when we talk about treatment for girls, it really has to be relational.
Relational.
Females are relational. The self-esteem is built on the connections that they have and how they feel they belong to. So the more that they interact with people and find support systems and reinteract with either the mom or the aunt or the grandparent or whoever that person was for them in the community, I think makes a much more positive outcome.
The prevailing approach to discipline and juvenile detention is based on confrontation. Think drill sergeant on steroids. Barking orders at hardened male delinquents may be an effective way to calm their outburst or even earn their grudging respect. But that hard-as-nails approach is counterproductive when dealing with girls.
Girls need more time to express themselves.
Barbara Morton is the area director for the Central Massachusetts Department of Youth Services.
Often you'll hear people say, I find it difficult to work with girls. Not people in the girls program, but if they said, would you work with boys or girls? They'd say, well, I work with the boys, they're easier. Well, when delving into why is it easier, girls, they take so much of your time because they want to talk, and they want to talk about the issues, and they want to talk about what just happened, and it wasn't fair, and we've got to sit down, and we've got to have this. And often you're running a program, I'll get to you, or I can't drop everything I'm doing every moment to have this one-hour discussion with you on how you felt about breakfast. Again, it goes back to the relational nature.
Is that a shortcoming in the system that perhaps that you're just now coming to realize that you've got to give these young women the audience that they require?
So which means a different staffing pattern in terms of the staffing patterns of number of clinicians to number of females. It's a resource challenge, but I think it would improve the system if we were able to do that.
Although there is no money for hiring extra counselors at Dorchester, they do give girls the chance to talk through issues. On this evening, after a dinner of spaghetti and meatballs, everyone gathered in the common room to talk. Some of the girls on sofas, some on folding chairs. It's a stab at creating a sense of hominess in an institution like this. During this house meeting, girls take turns reciting a negative and a positive aspect of their day.
Hi, my name is Tammy. My positive is that I'm going to court. Hopefully I'll get out. My negative is I'm still here with y'all people.
And inevitably, the girls' issues start to surface.
I don't think that it's fair. I understand we're locked up and this is a detention, whatever, but it's still not fair that we have to sit in our rooms sweating. It's hot. And then when we open the windows, the hot air is basically coming in anyway. We're sitting there sweating half to death, and I don't think, oh my God, yes, the mattresses. Oh my God, they're horrible. They sweat with us.
While boys might blow off steam on the basketball court, this is where the girls can vent. They talk, they rant, and the staff listens. And while this may help, the issues they bring up, excessive heat, annoying bugs, are a shadow of the much more serious problems that weigh down these young lives.
One more thing, please, Nancy.
There are many gender-specific issues or female-specific issues that we look at.
Again, Barbara Morton with the Massachusetts Department of Youth Services.
A lot of the things that you're talking about here, though, might sound to lawmakers to be sort of soft.
Yes.
You know, extra staff so you can give them counseling. Mm-hmm. In a law and order environment, I imagine that's a tough sell.
It is. And it is as a juvenile justice agency to talk about a lot of social issues or service issues because you have a lot of high-need, low-risk offenders.
High need, low risk. That's the challenge with girls in the juvenile justice system. And the Dorchester Girls Unit, with its 25 teenagers, underscores that quandary. As many as 80% of the girls here are victims of sexual or physical abuse. They often arrive with sexually transmitted diseases and other medical problems. Some are suicidal. In the past 2 months, 9 were pregnant when they arrived. A prison system originally designed for boys is simply not structured to handle these kinds of issues. Fran Sherman directs the Juvenile Rights Advocacy Project at the Boston College Law School.
The juvenile justice system, for many youth, and certainly for many girls, has become sort of a dumping ground. That girls who have not been successfully treated in the child welfare system, for example, or who would be more appropriately handled in the mental health system, find themselves in the juvenile justice system when those other systems fail them and when their families and their communities aren't able to help. And they end up in the juvenile justice system for crimes that are not particularly threatening to the community, but really are probably more threatening to themselves.
Crimes such as shoplifting, running away from home, violating parole. Sherman says keeping pace with the rising tide of female offenders requires a complete overhaul of the juvenile justice system. Girls, she said, should be more than an afterthought.
Not many states have really changed the way they do business around girls. One thing that can change is we can stop thinking of the juvenile justice system as the answer and begin looking back at the community as an answer for many of these girls, particularly the girls who are not serious offenders, you know, who they really can be handled a lot better in the community, and they would be better and we would all be better if we sort of shored up their families rather than removed them.
But for now, more of these girls are locked up each year. At their best, juvenile justice programs are supposed to help teens get their lives back on track. Here in Boston, the system is trying to change, but helping troubled girls turn their lives around is going to take much more than cosmetic efforts, such as days of beauty and mauve-colored paint.